WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Now some people may know him best for his Tough Guy light beer commercials, but Mickey Spillane is the creator of one of America's most popular hard-boiled private eyes. Spillane wrote his first Mike Hammer novel in 1947. I, the Jury was followed by 11 other Hammer stories, including Vengeance is Mine, The Big Kill, and Kiss Me Deadly. The character of Mike Hammer has also had a life in movies and on TV, but it's been 19 years since the last Mike Hammer novel, and now at the age of 71, Mickey Spillane has written a new one. It's called The Killing Man. Six of his earlier Hammer novels are being republished. Spillane lives in South Carolina, and his home was recently torn apart by Hurricane Hugo. I asked Mickey Spillane why he decided to bring Mike Hammer back.
It wasn't the case I brought him back. He never left. All these years I've had him out there on television land doing the series and doing motion pictures, and then I was playing the part of Mike Hammer in a characteristic style for the light beer commercials, you know, pork pie hat, trench coat, the doll. So his image was always up there in front of the public. But the reason I brought him back was because when I was on tour around the United States these past 16 years for light beer, people kept asking me, when are you going to write another book? Now, I wasn't ready to do it because I had overcharacterized the character as far as I was concerned. I needed that little break. And when I come back, it was nice and fresh. Of course, Mike Hammer isn't the same age as I am. I used to keep him my age deliberately. But now he's 45, 46 years old, while I'm 71. And he's going to benefit by my age and experience.
How do you think he's changed with the times?
Oh, he doesn't change. Mike Hammer's a state of mind. The city is the city. He works here. Somebody said something smart to me the other day because I thought nobody ever picked it up, but I use New York City not as a background but as a character. And the city actually is a character in my books. It creates moods. It does things, but it moves around with the people. And there's never been a physical description of Mike Hammer. As I said, he's a state of mind.
Why haven't you ever physically described him in the novels?
Because this way every man can put himself into Mike's shoes. You know, if you say he was short and fat, how would a tall, skinny guy do it? But he's known by his prowess, by his mental abilities, if you're going to give him any mental abilities. But he's a person, as anybody would be.
Does this mean that in your mind's eye, he's you?
No, he's not me. No, I don't go out and researching bullets anymore. You know, those days are gone for me. I'm a spectator sportsman now. But, you know, like I like to say, a writer of fiction is really a professional liar. You write these things and people believe it. You know, Mike Hammer gets more mail than I do. When the book comes out, I'm going to be flooded with mail to Mike Hammer. Strange, isn't it? But I'm glad to see that. I'm not complaining.
Mickey Spillane is my guest, and he has his first new Mike Hammer novel in 19 years. It's called The Killing Man. When you started writing the Mike Hammer novels, did you have a sense of what you wanted to do different from the other detective novels that you'd read?
Yeah, sure, because I started back when there were no books with this. The first book had a big sensual ending, and it wasn't sensual primarily so. This was a psychological drama, and nobody had done one like this before. And I came out with it. It was interpreted in various ways and run down by the critics as being lurid and whatnot, but it sold, and this is what things have come to now. Today, I don't write like people on the pornography is so prevalent it's disgusting, because you just cannot write a book about pure sex or pure violence. Those are exclamation points in a book. They happen here and there, but the rest of the story is a story about life.
I'm going to ask you to read something from your first Mike Hammer novel, I, the Jury. And this is from early on the book. It's like page 5, and I think it's a nice setup of what the character is like when you're first introducing him to readers. And this is a conversation that he's having with a friend of his who's a cop.
Ready?
Yeah.
When I looked up, Pat was staring at me strangely. He shook his head. I knew what he was thinking. Mike, lay off. For God's sake, don't go half-cocked about this. I know you too well. You'll start shooting up anyone connected with this and getting a jam you'll never get out of. I'm over it now, Pat. Don't get excited. From now on, I'm after one thing, the killer. You're a cop, Pat. You're tied down by rules and regulations. There's someone over you. I'm alone. I can slap someone in the puss and they can't do a damn thing. No one can kick me out of my job. Maybe there's no way to put up a huge fuss if I get gunned down. But then I still have a private cop's license with the privilege of pack a rod and they're afraid of me. I hate hard, Pat. When I latch onto the one behind this, they're going to wish they hadn't started it. Someday, before long, I'm going to have my rod and my mitt and the killer in front of me. I'm going to watch the killer's face. I'm going to plunk one right in his gut when he's dying on the floor and may kick his teeth out. You couldn't do that. You have to follow a book because you're a captain of homicide. Maybe the killer will wind up in a chair. You'd be satisfied, but I wouldn't. It's too easy. That killer is going down like Jack did.
Well, I think this sets up the character pretty well. And that whole sense of, and when he's dying on the floor, I may kick his teeth out.
Yeah. How about that?
So, I mean, what does that say about the character? I mean, what did you want to get in there?
Well, the character, something terrible has been done to Mike. His best friend has been shot. Not only shot, but has been shot in a horrible way because the killer wanted to see that guy hurt. Because shot him where it wasn't a death-dealing blow with that shot. He shot him in the gut. He's going to live a while. He's going to be in terrible pain. And that's the way that killer's going to die. So this is the premise of the whole story, that killer's going down just like Jack did, his friend did. And that's what happens.
And Mike Hammer says that in the end, the people have their justice. They get it through guys like me once in a while. You've made Hammer into the guy who's going to get justice outside of the law.
That's right. In this case, he's acting as an arm of the law, but in a different way. He can do things that nobody else can do. He's got more reason for doing it. He's not hung up by rules and regulations the way the cop was. And it's a case of personal vendetta on his part. See, I never had Mike Hammer ever taking a case for money. Everything he ever got into was because of a personal motivation. Something happened to somebody he liked, somebody he loved, some situation was intolerable, and he got into it, and with no money behind it. He was on his own all the way because this was a personal nature with him. And he needed all of his attention.
Hammer seems to take a lot of, almost pleasure in vengeance and in returning pain that's been received. Is it cathartic for you to write that way?
No, I never used that particular idea. When you're going into a tough situation, pain's going to be there. You don't want to dwell on these things. But there are certain episodes that require this type of thing. If you want to see pain, violence, sex, you read your newspapers. There's plenty of it there. We have to bring it in where it belongs in the book in order to make the book interesting. You just can't write all about that. Oh, I've had some bloody incidents. Sure, people like that. They see it when you see pictures of body parts flying around, everybody's oohing and aahing, but they stay there to see this. But the way the people are today, it seems to make no difference at all. They're so used to these things. They see it on television for real during the war. The combat scenes during warfare and the things that are happening now in Beirut and all around the world, and these plane crashes.
So you're saying your writing seems really tame by comparison?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But you can write about good scenes that would incorporate all this.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a certain rhythm. I mean, in some ways, I think you're really at your best when you're writing violent scenes. There's a certain rhythm that you get in those scenes.
Yeah, you can get mad when you write. I punch holes in my paper. Either yo's make holes or periods go right into the platen of the machine. I break up typewriters so fast that when I'm done with a story, that machine has to go in for repair. So you know what I'd do to it if I ever work with a word processor, tear it apart.
At the end of I, the Jury...
Yeah.
Yeah. this is like perhaps your most famous scene?
Well, this is the one that's so well remembered. This is the one I told you about. They said it was a sensual scene. I see, Mike, he's got a premise in his life. He is going to kill the person who killed his friend in the same way by shooting him in the gut. Now, at the end of the story there, when he's faced down with this woman that he loves, Charlotte, she knows what he wants to do. She has to get him away from this attitude, she starts to unrobe. She takes her clothes off piece by piece. And the description is of her getting down to the point where she's nude. And then she leans over while she's about to kiss him. She's really reaching for a gun behind his head. Now, if he's true to his premise, he'll stay alive. If he's not true to it, she's going to kill him. And, of course, what he does, he stays true. He shoots her right in the gut. Now, she's a psychiatrist. She couldn't understand that. And she says, "How could you?" And he says, "It was easy." And that's the way he was. That was the end of the story.
And that's your most famous line, I think, that
it
was easy.
Oh, yeah, it was easy.
Was it considered very unusual to have the private eye kill a woman at the end of a book?
Well, they didn't used to do it in those days. Women were sort of held up on a pedestal. I knocked this one off. I've already killed, I think, two women. I made them villains in any of my stories, but they were effective.
Now, why is that something you wanted to topple in your story?
Women can be as deadly as men any time. Again, you know, just refer back to your newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun doing it to them. Of course, there are other times when women are treated with much more consideration than that.
Were there any limits, editorial limits, censorship limits, to how much sex and violence you could use in the book and still be mass marketed? Were you always cognizant of what your limits were?
Well, the editors do funny things. When I wrote One Lonely Night, Mike Hammer killed off 200 people with a machine gun, kept reloading and shooting. He was in a commie nest, a real deadly area, and he shot 200 people. And the editor says, oh, that's much too much, too much blood. So he knocked it down to 100 people.
That was supposed to be a big change.
That's your editorial concept.
In your novels, women lick their luscious lips seductively a lot.
Yeah.
I know I'm a woman and not a man, but I've really never seen a woman lick her lips.
Well, you never were watching.
Perhaps.
That's a little game they play, you know.
Have you seen that a lot? Because, you know, I remember.
Sure, I've seen it many times. The French said they make a moo, M-O-U-E, you know,
Hammer is a violent guy, and everybody wonders if Mickey Spillane has been exposed to violence at all. I know that you were in World War II. Were you in combat then?
No, I didn't have to be. I was exposed to violence when I was a little kid. That's why I got a crew cut now after 70. I was 7 years old, and I lived in a crazy neighborhood where my mother wanted a girl and let my hair grow long. I had what they call a Buster Brown haircut. And the kids would get me by my hair and hold me down, beat the garbage out of me. So I got my mother's scissors out one day, and I cut all my hair off. Nobody's been able to do it to me since. So my life wasn't violent. I had a nice upbringing, you know. I got into all sports, did all kinds of things. You know, but violence per se is not in my backyard. You know, I've been exposed to it. I've done a lot of police work. I've done a lot of reporting and seen these things happen, been involved in some of it. I don't take pleasure in any of it, believe me.
Well, I read that you were actually with the police on the bust of a narcotics ring.
Oh, I was on several of those big ones, yeah.
But that you took two bullets on one of them.
Well, I got one. Uh-huh. That was enough. Well, it was one shot, but it was a buckshot in the darn thing. You know, whenever you go out playing around, you're going to get hurt. So the best thing to do, don't go where trouble happens. Otherwise, you're going to be part of it, and then you can get clobbered. I'm not about looking for any of these things anymore. I'll use everything that's in my mind. I will use my imagination, I'll get into fiction and keep it that way. I don't want any more realism. That gets to be rough.
Well, this is a kind of weird question, but when you actually were shot, I don't know if this is too weird or not, but how did it compare with how you imagined it was when you had characters being shot in your books?
Well, it was a little bit screwy because I was standing behind a whole bunch of tomato paste. There was a slogan for this tomato paste. Who put those six big tomatoes in the itty-bitty cans? And the bullet went through the cans, got everybody splashed with tomato paste, and everybody thought they had all been shot as well.
Oh, gee.
So the shot just sprayed around, and it was...
How bizarre. Since you had tomato sauce all over, did you know, were you able to figure out right away where the actual wound was?
Yeah, you'll know right where that is,
right,
but
okay.
You're not considering that right away. All you know is everybody got clobbered, and that was, you know, it was kind of hard to get the tomato sauce off, though. It wasn't deadly, I'll tell you that.
So is the sensation something that you've recalled for writing?
No. You're better off if you use your imagination. You know, writing is something completely different. When you're writing fiction, it's easy. You can do things with fiction that nobody would ever believe in. Words are great. They're expressive. You can say things that you'd never experience and make them sound real. Hey, that's what being a writer is all about. I have as much fun writing as I do have reading.
Mickey Spillane is my guest, and he's written his first Mike Hammer novel in 19 years. You've said that the first part of a story that comes to you is the ending, because that's where you have
sure.
to get to, and that's in your novels the most, the kind of, you know, the dramatic climax. Seems to me your titles come from the last page, too.
Not always. No, when you're writing, see, it's like a joke. The only part of a joke you listen to is that punchline. So when you develop a story, that's your important part, is the big ending on there. Now, O. Henry did this in all of his stuff, and he was an old-time writer. I've just gone ahead and elaborated on his style a little bit in the structure of a story. Titles come out of the air. I don't know where they come from, but when I was doing The Killing Man, we couldn't get a title for that, and we were writing down all sorts of titles. We put them on the computers looking for any duplications and whatnot. And I was sitting there, all of a sudden I looked at it, I said, The Killing Man, that's it. And just popped into my head.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't try for a title until after the book is finished.
Mickey Spillane is my guest, and his new novel is called The Killing Man. It's his first Mike Hammer book in 19 years. You played Mike Hammer once in the film The Girl Hunter.
Yeah.
What did it feel like to be him on screen?
Beautiful. I had a great deal of fun with that because not only was I acting, I was in part of the production work, I'd written the script, I was in charge of casting, and so I'm not all that tall like some of these guys, these big 6 footers and all that stuff. I'm 5'8", and I didn't want to look like a little shrimp on screen, and I didn't want to wear high heels. I didn't want anybody walking in trenches and walking on apples. So what I did, I wouldn't hire anybody if they came above my eyes. And it's easy to find short actors. So I was able to swagger through the picture. You know, the next tallest one to me was my leading lady, Shirley Eaton. So I had a good time making the picture. I didn't forget the words because I had written them.
Something I recently learned about you is that you are or were, I'm not sure which, a Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, I've been a Jehovah's Witness since 1951.
You know, what surprised me about that was that I know you're not your character, but, I mean, Hammer is such the man alone that it seemed like hard for me to fathom that you were, you know, part of an organized religion.
Well, I'm not going to discuss it with you now, but next time one of Jehovah's Witnesses knocks on the door, call them in. They'll tell you all about it. But religion's a strange thing, you know. It's something you have personally in your lives, and you got to believe in it, and I believe in what I believe in.
Can I ask if the Witnesses have ever objected to your books?
No. I don't think they read them, and I don't blame them. But when you're writing, it's just this is a job with me. I don't write for any express purpose like passing messages around. It's strictly a job. I try to keep them fairly contemporary and fairly clean. The first time I used a four-letter word in a book, I thought the publisher was going to go out of their minds, and this was a long time after it was coming out in other books. I don't try to use bad language, mainly because these are, again, our exclamation points within the story. And I try to keep things as normal as possible. Anybody wants to read violence and sex, go to the newspaper. There's plenty of it there.
Something else I recently learned about you is that you collect blue willow pottery.
Yeah.
Which is a surprising hobby for a hard-boiled guy.
Well, it's not a one-time blue willow was just cheap kitchenware for all the farm ladies all over the country. It was made by different companies, but there was a classic thing about it. It was all excellently made. It was great chinaware. Cheap, very cheap. But now it's up on the stage where, you know, it becomes antique and looks nice. And I lost a whole mess of it down
in the hurricane.
Hurricane.
Yeah.
And my wife collects pewterware, and she lost her pewterware. But we'll get it back. There's a lot of it out there, and the fun is going out collecting these things and doing it again. And I like it. It's useful. It's pretty looking. And reminds me of my childhood, because we had it at home.
Well, speaking of your childhood, your father was a bartender?
Yeah, he was a good Irish bartender in Brooklyn.
So did you hang out at that bar?
No, I would never hang out at a bar because I don't like the atmosphere of a bar. It's nobody goes into a bar to get sober. And again, it's a trouble spot. Bar scenes where you have restaurants, well, this is a different situation. But when you speak of a bar, you know what you're speaking of is like a neighborhood pub type of bar where everybody's in there and they finally, it's a place where they go and they don't want to go home. But I don't hang around in those places. Mm-hmm. I never did.
How did you start doing light beer commercials?
Oh, they asked me to do it, and I loved it. We brought that beer from nothing right up to the second largest selling beer in the world. And it was a pleasure to do it. 16 years worth is a long time. But we did the commercials right through, did a lot of public appearances all over the United States.
How do you think the private eye field, the literary field, has changed in the 19 years that you weren't writing books?
They got into things like with the CIA, into a little more exotic areas than plain old murder. But the thing is with murder, see, you'll never get away from murder. I mean, the murder is there. That's a simple crime. It can be a major catastrophe. But it's something you don't have to get involved with with governmental action. You don't have to, but he can all tie in. Murder is the basis of all of my stories. I really get out into the spy field or get involved with anything else like that.
The CIA figures into your new novel. Did you feel like you had to keep up in a way with the changes in the field?
Oh, no. I was just doing it because it was handy. It was a thing to do. And it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
I never played a cop's town. I have the greatest respect in the world for police departments. I'll tell you what, even if a cop is on the take, this is a cop that's going to protect you. He'll run right down a black alley after a guy who's got a machine gun in his hand just to save your life or protect you. So the cops are, these are very dedicated persons. They're highly underpaid, I'll tell you that. But they're great people to know and to work with.
How involved were you with the My Camera TV series?
Oh, I do anything I want with the TV series, but I didn't bother to because when you have, I'm living down in South Carolina, and this is all being put together out in California, so I let Jay Bernstein handle it all, and he did a good, competent job of it. You have trouble with things that start to wear out after a while, like storylines and whatnot, but we get in there if necessary and fix them up.
So you plan on doing more writing now, more novels?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have another novel out next year. I got one almost finished now. That's the one that Hurricane Hugo blew all over the area.
Oh.
3/4 of the book went down a drain when my downstairs office got wrecked. I managed to save the first 2 chapters and the ending. And I know every word that I had written down on the other pages, so it'll be no big deal to getting it back together.
So you basically memorize what you've written, huh? I mean, you just remember
I remember. It didn't memorize. It's just right there, and I know my style, and I know it'll come out almost exactly the way it went down initially.
So this is another My Camera book?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
People want them, they got them.
Mickey Spillane, thanks a lot for talking with us.
I'm glad to be here.